about how before the sin, Adam and Eve were asexual organisms, and after the sin, they became sexual organisms, and therefore, you know, we end up seeing that Taras HaMishpacha is really a punishment to Eve for all that she did. And there were like some Beis Yaakov girls sitting in the room, they're, oh! Like I thought people's hearts were going to literally, like, you know, explode on the table. So I had to speak afterwards. And I got up to speak, and I said, oh, that was really enlightening for me. That was, you know, very inspiring. Just to clarify, you know, the psukim actually tell us that, you know, it delineates the exact punishments that Chava got. And, you know, we have them listed here, right? Elishamar, Harbarba, it's Voneich, Veheronech, you know, like menstruation and pregnancy, those are going to be difficult for her. Be'etzev Teldibanim, right? It's like labor, you know, I can share with how many can attest to that, right? That's right. And Veli Sheikh Chukaseich, you're going to yearn for your husband. Vehuyim Shobach, he's going to be the dominating role, because when we had Chav as the dominating role, that didn't turn out too well, right? and he's going to be the dominating factor in the marriage, and these are the curses of Eve. And Taras HaMishpacha actually isn't mentioned in the exact text. But how can we view the laws of family purity in light of this? So, you know, recalibration, right? That's like, think really quick. How can we view family purity in light of the sin of Chava? Because afterwards, you know, the blame game happened. You know, Adam said, oh, it was her, right? And Chava said, oh, it was the Nachash. Each of them got their punishments. But then Chava was given a gift. Chava was given a gift. Hashem said to Chava, Chava, you created a barrier, a mechitza, between Adam and Hashem because you were afraid of being separated from him. You created a barrier between Adam and Hashem because you were afraid of being separated from him. Therefore, what did I write at the bottom here? Oh, now she, Chava, what can she do? She can show that she's willing to separate from her husband to allow Hashem into that most intimate aspect of her relationship with him. Again, she created a barrier between Adam and Hashem, and now, because she was afraid to be separated from her husband, and now she's willing to separate from her husband in order to allow Hashem right in Beinehem, okay, in that most intimate, tiny spot that Hashem could possibly be. And that's why, you know, the in Halacha, we have brought down, in Yerodeya, that hamarba b'ta'ava, the more passion, the more love, the more desire that is between a husband and wife in sha'as hazivug, the more Hashem wants to be there. The brachos come. The banim yiyu yafim, banim yiyu talmidei chachamim. The children are going to be smart. They're going to be beautiful, right? That the more real the relationship is in that most intimate part of this couple's life, the more real it is, the more giving it is, the more open it is, the more, for you, lack of a better term, exciting it is, the more Hashem wants to be there. Because she's allowing, she's bringing him home from at the mikvah, she's becoming a kli to bring Hashem home right in to her marriage. And this is not just in our own personal marriage. This is throughout history. This is bringing from Chava all the way down, generation after generation. It's links in the chains. And these girls that we're talking to, their great-great-grandmothers were links in the chains, we hope, unless they're, you know, their last name's Levine, but really that's their father's name and their mom's really McNally, you know. So, but these girls, their great-great-grandmothers were doing this. And sometimes the links weaken, but they can go home and bring their mothers right in. They can themselves, you know, reestablish the chain for the rest of history. And I tell these girls that in Mitzrayim, the Kliyakar actually said this before me, it's not my own idea, that in Mitzrayim, right, that what's the first plague? Dam, blood, in the water, for 7 days, right, where resound, I mean, clearly Hashem is lashing out. Mida keneged mida, Hashem is lashing out. You tried to stop my women from going, my women who bizchus nashim tid kanios negalo of a sinim tzayim ubizchus san atidin higael, that the merit of these righteous women got us out. They used to go in the Nile River and risk their lives, right? You tried to stop those women. They're the future hope of Klal Yisrael. They're what's going to bring us from Chava all the way down to reuniting mankind. Bringing the barrier, bringing the mechitza out from between mankind and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I find this message, I find so many people from all walks of life can connect to this. They can connect to history up to Chava. They can, their Jewish identity gets tapped right into, and they know the story already, you know, and they feel it's intellectually compelling. It's logical. And this message has seen so much hatzlacha. It's adapted in part from Rivki Katz. I don't know if people are familiar. What? Yeah, from Canada. Are familiar with her. And Rebbetzin Bailey Stern, one of whom is a Tash of her chassid and one of whom is a Samar chassid. It's like, you know, this is where we're reaping our information from, who gave me the ideas for this message, and I found it to be very compelling. And before a girl's chasana, and we only have 5 minutes, you know, we're 5 minutes in debt here. So you know, before, you know, we go our separate ways, before a girl's chasana, you know, even for a frum girl, a mother feels like, you know, I've heard from mothers say, like, how could you go to Bed Bath & Beyond without me and register? You know, how can you choose out the flowers without me? How can you pick a wedding invitation? Right? There are mothers who want to be involved and they want to connect. And for a non-frum mother, this is like, you know, she's been fighting this for years a lot of times. Or, you know, watching it from afar at best, feeling somewhat alienated but still maintaining a relationship with her daughter. And now she finally sees something in her daughter that my daughter's feeling romance. She's feeling love. And I can connect to that. But I can't connect to that because it's so different. And if this is a time that's such an emotionally high time for the mother that so many times, you know, you think, like, I've had a girl promise me, my dad's never going to let, my mom's totally not going to be interested. I say, okay, you can offer it to her. You know, she can come to the class. You know, I'll give you this class together with her. She can come and just listen, just to be with you. And they'll say, oh, this is my preparation for the mitzvah. Just come to the class. And at the end, we throw it out. And the mother's like, yeah, you know, I'll do that. We've seen a lot of hatzlacha. And I'm here to Hashem by everyone. You know, everyone's probably doing such amazing work, you know, speaking to women on campus, speaking to women in their communities about these topics. And you know, you plant a seed, and you can be the one who will inspire someone to, what is it, take the plunge? Is that what we said? Inspire someone to go ahead and embark on this journey one day. And usually how I leave it off, you know, Kala's, you know, they're not planning initially to get themselves into a way of life. But usually the message that I'll leave off with them is, you know, before you decide to have your baby, come back. You know, you want to give those special blessings to your child. Come back. Let's do this again. You know, let's do this again before you have a baby. And you know, there are ways of slowly but surely. Once a person has in their intellect, this is something that I can do and something that connects me to Jewish history. You know, it's hopefully to people will see a lot of hatzlacha. Yes.
A quick question. So do you do this with the from kallahs you teach, whose parents, whose mothers are a little alienated because they have been anti, as well as people who are just coming, but they're just, it's like a one-stop, you know, they're just going to meet you and then...
Exactly.
And then so is this like a joint party, like the mother is like total the same night as your daughter?
So it's interesting. No, well, most kallahs go during the day. Right. But I've had one kallah who brought her mother the next month because it didn't work out for her mother, you know, before. But the mother goes, the mother does the whole nine yards. And obviously you have to ask your posek, you know, what to tell the mother, whether she should do bidikos on day one and day seven. You know, the particulars, you have to be in touch with someone, you know, that you would ask shilos to. But yes, the girls that are coming, usually a kala calls up the mikvah, says, yeah, I want to make an appointment for 3 months from now. I'm getting married. I've been engaged for 2 years. I'm like, hey, you know, my fiance and I are going to be in the area, and I'm going to come, you know, his parents live there, whatever, and I'm going to come, or she's from my area, whatever it is. And I'll talk to her, and 80% of the time, her mother-in-law, a sister, a cousin, there's usually a whole party coming along with them. Yes, yes. There is usually a bunch
of times, you're saying, because it's not everyone's going on her own.
So the thing with the mothers is most of these mothers are over 60. Yeah, most of their daughters are getting married at the young age of, 37, and they want, and this is to them, this, they've been waiting their whole lives for this, their one child who they want to bring down to the chuppah. And
the mother, even though it's technically not relevant anymore, she's going,
it's 100% relevant because she's still a nida. She's never been to a mikvah. A woman's a nida until she goes to the mikvah. I should have made that clear when I started. These mothers, if they haven't ever been, so that.
We just talked about it. That one time, and then there's all these kind of things that say
retroactive brachos.
But what if they're not post-legalist?
If they're not, then they can still do it, and you can get them on their cycle. Then, so then you have to get them on their cycle. Their daughter, you have to work those details out. I've only had that twice. Yes, I've had that twice. Most mothers of these, non-from kalas are in their late 50s, at least. But, that's something.
Continue doing this after? Most of them don't.
Who? The kalas? So many of them may. It's their first thing. They weren't planning on getting themselves into this at all. Their experience with mikvah is, my best friend converted her Guatemalan baby in a mikvah. You know what I mean? Like, that's like how they know of mikvah. And like, a bunch of my friends had a mikvah party before she got married. That's how they know of it. They weren't planning on getting themselves into anything. I leave them with Tehillah Abramoff's book, and you hope to hear from them. It's planting seeds. Yes.
The way I did was I spoke to her Usher Weiss in Yerushalayim.
Yes.
She came and sat and had to do just 5 days. She ever spoken about that?
5 days instead of seven?
Yes.
So, meaning bare minimum d'oraisa. They're not a zava gadola. They're just a regular nida. We're going back to pre-Gemara times. So that's
the perfect way, or that is.
Right. So that's something everyone has to talk to their own posek about. You know what I mean? Like those particulars, I've heard all sorts of psak, But like those particulars, each person has to speak to their posek about in every situation. Each situation is so different. So different. It's a way to get to plant a seed. For me personally, some people are, have more contact. These people just meet me for an hour. Do you know what I mean? With kalas that I teach or that I know for many years, I'm talking about the people who are calling the mikvah randomly. But kalas that I teach over many years, obviously the goal is, we're in the long haul here. But, for these girls who, it's my only hour that I'm going to possibly have with them, you hope they'll call you back before they have a kid, right? That's what I'm hoping for. Or that they'll read the book, or that they'll tell a friend. I know, right? I keep a database. I have to, we'll have to develop it further. A lot of them don't even stay in the New Haven area. So
when they come all together, you don't have them all watching the plunge.
No,
okay.
We don't. They stand in the other room. I think it's like a moral support. I wondered at first when they, the only reason I started offering is because 80% of the time the mothers were coming. You know what I mean? They stand in the other room. They hang out in the waiting room. They're all schmoozing. And then, right, and then the kala comes out. She's in her robe. Her hair is, whatever. And we all start singing and dancing. It's like really awkward, We all start singing and dancing. Odi Shama. And Spartan do that. Yes, Spartan have a mikvah party. They're very involved culturally. They're very involved in that. Yes, but you have to make a very awkward situation really exciting and fun.
And how do the fiancés take to it most of the time?
So I tend to offer a course with my husband. A lot of them do take up on it. Usually they're just like really happy that their fiancés really. Excited, yeah. They don't really know the difference at that point, Like it's not whatever. They just know that for 12 days they're not allowed to, be together. Exactly. That's all they know, and they're okay with that most of the time. So.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.